Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio someone who's, well, had a storied career, I think, Marta Elaine Zegren.
That's right.
And I say storied because I have had the pleasure of knowing her back in the day before she started into a career and establishment of what is referred to as Mez Pottery. What does Mez mean?
Well, it's just my initials, Marta Elaine Zegren. But since most people know me through Mez, I do get called Mez a lot instead of Marta, which is fine. I think it's kind of cool.
Okay, so how did you get into doing pottery?
Well, we moved from Florida to Alaska when I was about 11. And on the way, my parents bought a kiln and a wheel, a kick wheel, after my dad had taken a class in Florida. And when we got up here, they just thought it would be a good thing for me and my younger, older sister to do, just play around on the wheel and stuff. So he showed me some techniques. And so as a kid, I was able to learn how to throw and get a lot of time on the wheel. And then just took classes in middle school and high school and college. One particular thing I liked about middle school is my teacher was Mrs. Latecki, and she was so nice, and she let me take independent study as a middle schooler to throw on the wheel. So I really got a lot of time on the wheel, which was great. And then I took classes all through college, even though I was pursuing a degree in geology, which I ended up getting at Northern Arizona University. But after college, I just really didn't enjoy the work. I thought it was going to be this awesome field work, and it turns out you have to sit in the office and 9 to 5, and I just really didn't want to do that. So I was able to get an apprenticeship with Peter Bronze out of Bird Creek, and he's been a potter for, you know, dozens of years, probably 30 years now, and he's an expert. He's just great at what he does. So having learned the techniques from him, not just how to throw, but like how to use your time effectively, how to be productive, how productive you need to be to make a living selling pottery. So I really had a valuable couple of years with him. And then after that, I kind of waitressed and threw. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go full bore. I'm going to jump in. My family's like, we'll help you, you know. And from then, I've just been kind of learning the ropes, you know, messing up a lot of firings. And
so you have you've had a studio here in the Palmer area.
Yes, for 6-7 years now.
Okay, and you're about to move to a place with hope.
Yes, a place with hope, in Hope, yes.
Yes.
Trying to get my studio set up out there, so.
So I've been to Hope, and it's a really pretty place.
Oh, yeah.
How did it come to that you decided that of all the places in the world, Hope was the place?
Well,
do this?
I live out there with my partner right now, we've been together for a few years, and I just decided it's time to make the move out there because it's a beautiful place, and it just kind of works well with me. I mean, I don't have to be in town or, you know, my work is better done when I'm, you know, in a serene environment that's, like, quiet and without interruption, so Hope offers that for me. I mean, my studio now, as it's set up, it's just beautiful. I just stare out at the woods. And that's what I had at Peter's place too. And I remember when I was there staring out at his beautiful woods and stuff and thinking, man, I got to have a place like this. I mean, my studio now is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Right.
But it's a cluttered garage that's very distracting from time to time. So,
sure. And are you going to be in the center of Hope or are you going to be on the outskirts?
No, kind of on the outskirts and stuff. But I hope to put up a gallery out there like Peter has a gallery.
Right.
You know, kind of like come and drive in and look at it, turn on the lights, turn on the heater sort of thing. And, you know, and also just try to be a part of the market scene or make, you know, try to do a couple Saturday markets in Hope. But I still like to do things in Palmer. And I'm at Vagabond Blues, actually, in Palmer. I have my work there,
mm-hmm.
which is actually where you ran into me today. So,
and so you've had something that very early in middle school attracted you. And you were fortunate to be able to keep on going with that.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you, how could you describe the attraction in terms of what is there about doing pottery that keeps you doing pottery?
I think one of the main things is that I love to be productive and to see my productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I like work.
Okay.
I don't like to just sit around and not do anything. I have a busy mind, I guess. And when I throw, it's, you know, one of my favorite things to do is when I'm done throwing for the day is just to see my wear cart and to see all the cups lined up and all the bowls and be like, wow, I made those with my own hands. And just to know that they can endure too. It's not like this piece of paper, you know, it's like something that someone will cherish, you know, someone will love. I love to hold a piece, you know, and have it, and you can remember things from it. But I think that, you know, being my own boss was also really important. Like, I just can't take instruction well.
So
that's another aspect of pottery I love. I love making my own schedule. I love that I can go on a walk if I want to. And I love that I can work late if I want to. You know, I love the freedom. I think that's really
Cool. I've had a chance to take a look at some of your more recent work. And my impression about pottery is that the pieces that I see from different people have the impression of the work and the ideas of the person who is the potter. And no two pieces of pottery are exactly alike. They're not clones one to another. Even if you're doing a series of birch mugs or whatever, they all, and maybe that's part of both the joy of producing, but also in terms of someone who would want to use a piece of pottery, that you look at it, you're attracted to it for whatever reason, but it is unique in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be another piece exactly like it, even though you have a theme that you're working on.
Yeah, I think people, that's one of the, as a person who needs to sell to make a living, that's one of the things that I have to tell people at the markets is that this isn't a copy. It's not a print. I handmade each one of these pieces. And, you know, it's truly the only one. So if it speaks to you, if you look at that and you say, oh, my God, I'd love to have that, you would. And you'd love it every day and you'd never regret it. And it would be so useful. And I think that's the thing that it's hard for people who don't already buy or know pottery to understand that, yes, you could get a mug cheaper at a chain store, but it doesn't have the same sense. It could have the same sensation, of course, but to know the potter and to buy a mug that you know, when I make a piece, I don't want to skimp. I don't want to make anything lacking in that piece. And so I think that if a person could understand that by seeing them and holding it and using it, I think that that's what is so great about handmade pottery in general. You know, it is unique. And
let's talk ingredients. What goes into,
like, time ingredients or materials ingredients?
Material, time, and we can get to time too because that's important. But what goes into what you use to make something?
Make a piece. Well, clay is the main ingredient, and that I purchased from Seattle.
Okay.
Once you throw the piece, you have to then let it dry, trim it, put a handle on it, embellish it, and bisque it, and then you glaze it. Now, glazes are also, you use minerals for glazes, and so I make all my own glazes and stuff. And a glaze is like basically a glass that chemically adheres to, or molecularly adheres to, the surface of the clay when it's being fired. It gets up to around 2100 degrees. And when it gets up to that temperature, the clay and glaze vitrify and they become more or less non-porous and non-permeable.
Huh?
So after that, you know, it's ready to go. You unload it. I fired a cone 6. Cones are a measure of the temperature over a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So cone 6 is considered, a functional daily use clay, especially nowadays. Maybe in the past, they didn't have their clay formulated to melt at that temperature. But now, I get my clay from Clay Art Center out of Tacoma, and they're the best. And they can answer any questions. But they're also, their clays are very consistent. And so I just use two clays. I use a stoneware and a porcelain. Porcelain is all white, and stoneware has some iron in it, so it can be a buff or tan color.
Okay. Time. Let's go to time. How long does it take to create a cup?
Well, there's a huge part of the process, if you start with throwing or wedging, you wedge the clay to align the clay grains, and then you throw the piece, and then
Wedge. What do you use to wedge?
You wedge clay, you wedge on a wedging table, and basically it's kind of like kneading dough, except for you're pushing out any sort of air bubbles that might be in the clay,
okay.
Or you're also aligning the clay grains in a spiral, because that helps it pull higher up or stay sturdier. So, you know, that's just such a beginning part, but you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you throw the piece, and then you trim the piece, you handle the piece. Then you load it into the bisque, you fire it, unload it, and then you have to clean it up and wax the bottom so that when you glaze it, the bottom doesn't have wax on it. That's a very important step. And then once you glazed every piece, you reload them into the kiln, fire them, unload them. And then the final step is polishing the bottom. So I use a diamond sanding pad, which is really cool. Makes the bottom smooth as butter, which is really important. And then also sometimes in the kiln, these things can get wobbly, even though they started flat.
Right.
They can, the bowls especially can deform. So then I'll grind them flat with my grinding disc, and then you got to sell it.
then yeah. You have this.
But that doesn't count in the time making. So I would say for a quick, you know, dip, done mug, you know, I call those like, you know, I don't embellish with lots of beautiful glazes, like the mountain mugs or the birch mugs take extra time. But, you know, a two-tone glaze mug would take about an hour. But the mountain mugs take about 2 hours when you accumulate all the time you've spent on the piece. Large casseroles take much more time.
Okay, Mike Malevsky here, and I'm talking with Marta from Mez. What's that?
It's Mez Pottery.
Mez Pottery.
Yes.
That's right.
It's very simple to remember.
Mez Pottery. Yeah. Formerly of Palmer, soon to be of Hope. And so if someone were to go to Hope, they could stop in, or what's the story there?
I don't have the gallery set up in Hope yet.
At some point.
But at some point in the future, I do sell my stuff in Girdwood at the Girdwood Center for Visual Arts. It's a artist cooperative. So it's right next to the bake shop. It's a really neat place to stop
in. And places like Vagabond Blues.
Vagabonds. And then there's also, you know, great local place. And then in Anchorage, I'm at Dos Manos Gallery, which is across the street from REI. And they have a lot of great local artists. All the places that I sell my stuff is, there's a reason. It's because they're honest and they support local business and, you know, Alaskan-made products. So.
Okay. Well, thank you today for taking the time to come in and provide a little bit of insight for listeners who may be somewhat familiar with pottery, but as you've described it, I think they have an added understanding. Have a good day.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.